Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The law of unintended consequences is in play, and in a very big way. The West's attempt to seriously damage the Russian economy through sanctions is very risky and dangerous. Those most enthusiastic to sanction are beginning to understand the same sanctions will hurt their own economies and citizens. Crosstalking sanctions, I'm joined by my guest, Jim Rogers, in Singapore. He's an international investor and author. In London, we have Mitch Feierstein. He is an investor and author of the book Planet Ponzi. And in Los Angeles, we cross to Pai Ian. He is a strategic planning consultant, a private equity advisor, and independent economic analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Jim, let me go to you first here. Is the Biden administration attempting to sanction or secondary sanction half the world economy? Because that's what it looks like to me. Go ahead.
Well, many politicians all over the world and bureaucrats love sanctions, Peter. I have written about it and broadcast about it. They really don't work, other than maybe for a short period of time against a few people. I know of no, if any, cases where sanctions have worked.
Okay, well, that's a very quick answer from you, Mitch. The same question to you, because this really is a, you know, we have to put it all into context. I mean, Russia is a member of the G20, at least still, and, you know, it's being sanctioned, and it's something of an economy this size. It's never been done before. This isn't Iran. It's not Panama. It's not Honduras. It's Russia. Is this going to work? Go ahead, Mitch.
Well, I think we've got to examine all the points here. I mean, this is a multipolar world, and a lot of people still believe it's a unipolar world. So there are long-term consequences for every action. And, you know, the first couple things we need to think about, free speech and due process and rule of law are paramount to any democratic society. And things have changed so drastically in the past 2 years, and things are moving so quickly, it's difficult to see what's going on. Sanctions and secondary sanctions, as Jim rightly said, I don't see where they've ever worked before. Except now we have a form of third-party coercion trying to regulate all global transactions. This is playing fast and loose with due process and the rule of law. We already have inflation because of the Green New Deal through the back door and net zero that's pushed oil prices up 200% from November 2020 to before the conflict in February. So they were already up 200% and they can go much higher. And I think what's happened is this has become counterproductive, because what you've got now is you've got Russia, China, Iran, India, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and Africa all on one side. And there's massive polarization going on, and the West is trying to coordinate their team together. So I think cooler heads need to prevail. I think that there's no need to have a war. This could have been a big compromise Sure. well in advance of where we got to today. And it's concerning.
Pai, the same thing to you. I mean, this global grasp is quite amazing here. Again, historically, sanctions don't work, or at least they don't work for very long, because economies adjust, consumers adjust as well. But, I mean, if we take a country like Germany, and I agree with Mitch here, you know, I mean, everyone's getting their camp organized. But, I mean, if you're totally, if you're significantly dependent on outside energy, as Germany is, on Russia, I mean, that's almost like turning off the switch. I mean, this is difficult to grasp the magnitude of this. Go ahead, Pai.
Yeah, the West is engaging in a fist fight with a Eurasian bloc, keyword bloc, which is fighting back with Aikido or Judo, namely using the force of the opponent against the opponent, meaning the East has done its homework. The blowback from these sanctions can significantly harm non-sanctioned financial entities. And the global derivative space is dangerously complex enough as it is, to where financial press certainly isn't going to explore viable risks, preferring they're just going to want to do a wait and see stance copy in order to just prevent panic. We don't do that here. No one knows the size of exposure in off the books euro dollar markets. So if one of the parties is made illiquid due to these sanctions, it could cause exposed banks to fail. Restrictions piled on Russian banks would block counterparties from meeting derivatives contract obligations under ISDA agreements. And the trick then becomes how to close out highly leveraged positions containing just indefinite open risks. These are forbidden issues to be discussed in financial press. Western firms could lose control over closeout valuations for terminated transactions. After 2014, the Maidan and Crimea and everything, the International Derivatives Body gave sanction-specific language designed to minimize disruptions. But counterparties haven't even worked them into their contracts. I don't know if it's laziness or they have other risks that they're trying to alleviate. But, you know, it's heads up now. Liquidity is deteriorating and sanctions kick in on seven Russian banks this Saturday. So trading out of positions with much longer maturities will not be easy. I sense there's something systemic approaching.
Okay. Well, that's...
You know, I want to...
Jim, jump in. Go ahead.
I just want to say, you know, the Russians have also imposed sanctions. We're talking like only the West. No, but the Russians have also imposed sanctions. They're not going to work either. There are academic studies which show, I haven't read them, but I've read about them. Academic studies which show that sanctions do not work. Politicians like them for PR, for publicity. They say, look, we did it, we did it, we did it. But then a week later, everybody's forgotten about it, including the sanctions. And the market always finds a way to get around sanctions.
Mitch, do you agree with that?
Yeah, well, there's always a way around sanctions. I agree. But this time, I think we've got a bigger problem. And I mentioned this years ago, back in 2014, I think. First of all, you can never taper a Ponzi scheme. And we've never gotten through the 2008 credit crisis. Now we just have new crises to wallpaper over the largesse and the printing of trillions and trillions of dollars that the world has become awash with too much money. And they're trying to assign the blame. In 2019, in December, somebody asked me, I did an interview, and they wanted to know what I thought the most significant coming event would be in the coming decade. And I said, the US dollar will lose its reserve status. I think that's on the cards now a lot sooner than anybody thinks, because what we have is an unprecedented food, energy, and scarcity crisis right now. And the problem with the group of countries now, Russia, Iran, and China, is that oil prices, which are already trading at $116 right now in the US, have pushed energy prices to the point of unaffordability for most Americans. That price can be tripled or even higher should Iran decide to close the Strait of Hormuz. And this is also something that people need to look about, these unintended consequences that could be a result of these sanctions, because we started with a currency war. And then we moved into a trade war situation, and the bad result of that could be a hot war where nobody's a winner. And that's why we need people to de-escalate. De-escalate is what we really need, de-escalation, not escalation. And it seems to me that we've had a lot of escalation going on and no de-escalation.
Yeah, well, I think, again, it's just hotheads and they're ideologically possessed that are pushing this here. Pai, I mean, this is very a catastrophic place that we're at here. But, you know, when I'm listening to all three of you, and I have to, because of my job, watch a lot of cable TV. No one is saying what you three are saying. Why? Go ahead, Pai.
Because it's, you know, Mitch somewhat, both Jim and Mitch reference, it's a confidence game, a confidence trick that's decades old, that was ratcheted up 51 years ago after Nixon took us off the gold standard, which is essentially a global default. But, you know, they've been reinventing the confidence trick, and it's hit a wall now. The collateral risk and systemic risk issues are vastly they're too large to be even hinted at. So most press is just saying, well, let's wait and see what happens. Like, high inflation already existed pre-February 24th, okay? And uncollateralized trades raise funding and credit valuation adjustments for banks, spiking hedging costs due to soaring spreads on Russia-linked assets. This, in turn, strains liquidity. People don't understand, like, that institutions are far worse off than they advertise. Dismissing LIBOR a few years ago as a swap reference rate doesn't help with funding risk transfer either. So if Russia stops exporting energy to Europe, for instance, then European corporates already under cost squeezes from inflation are going to face credit crunches. If, or some say when, Russia defaults on $150 billion of sovereign debt, then we're talking Lehman Brothers and even 1914 level systemic risks. Russia doesn't want to default. I mean, that's not their intent, but Western banks may force it to, begging questions over whether or not there's a deeper sense of control demolition and asset culling going on here.
Okay, but that, Jim, that cannot be good for Western financial institutions seeing Russia default. Go ahead, Jim, in Singapore.
Well, I really want to go back to what we said before about what, you know, America's shooting itself in the foot as far as the U.S. dollar is concerned. The U.S. dollar is the world's reserve currency and medium of exchange, but the world's medium of exchange is supposed to be neutral. You can use it for anything, pay your girlfriend, buy a boat, do anything you want. That's what it's supposed to be. But now the U.S. is changing the rules, and they're making it, you know, if we don't like you, we put sanctions on you, and you cannot use U.S. dollars. Well, that's making a lot of people say, well, wait a minute. Even friends say, wait a minute, we got to find something else. There's already a move by China, Russia, India, Brazil, Iran, and other countries to come up with an alternative. This is only accelerating. I don't like saying this, Peter. I'm an American. But this is accelerating the move away from the U.S. dollar as the world's medium of exchange.
Mitch, we got 40 seconds before we go to the break. Talk about the dollar. Go ahead, Mitch.
Well, I think the U.S. dollar has, as Jimmy's right, it's shot itself in the foot. But I think that's been a long time coming with the money printing. And you've got, you know, as I explain in my book, that the entire government debt situation globally is the biggest Ponzi scheme we've ever seen, and it's Planet Ponzi. It's so much debt that it can never be repaid.
Yeah.
And you can never taper a Ponzi scheme, and this one's the biggest of all. So, you know, when that happens, people lose faith in the currency. But I think what will happen is there'll be a currency that's based on exchangeable commodities, and that will be the winner going forward.
Okay, well, we're going to go to a short break, gentlemen, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the sanctions war affecting just about everybody in the world. Stay with RT.
Знаходимося для того, щоб від імені американського народу висловити вам підтримку.
Free world is with you. America is with you. I am with you.
Але вони зрозуміли.
Завтра підемо разом вперед. Якщо куля в лоб, то куля в лоб.
Не могла. Когда ночью стреляют из БТР и спать не дают.
Только что шандарахнуло, не слышали? Аж дом закачался, где-то что-то рвануло. Никому мы не нужны, видно.
Деревня очень хорошая. Там вот такой вот рынок был, и крыша вот так вот напополам.
Координати такі дві. Наводяться по таким координатам, стріляють.
Дімич, ти мої. Хто закончилась війна?
Сірая зона – це розграничення між арміями. По одну сторону стоїть армія, по вторую. В село не повинен ніхто заходити. Ми тут просто живемо.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing sanctions. Okay, let's go back to Los Angeles. Like, I want to see if I mean, all three of you guys are really, really smart, and I want to see if I understand what's going on here. I mean, we see a fragmentation of the financial system. Are we going to see, like, very defined trading blocks now? I mean, you know, I've lamented globalization ever since they invented the term, okay? But is this kind of an anti-globalization process where we're going to have a Eurasian bloc, we're going to have the U.S. bloc? Is this where we're going? Go ahead.
Perhaps that en route to something a little bit more integrated via a multipolar rather than unipolar, even bipolar world. But I wanted to just go back, Mitch and Jim, we're referencing the dollar issue. I just wanted to pose a question of, like, to what extent is this 48-year-old petrodollar reserve recycling arrangement enabling liquidity fixes against systemic risk? You think about 1997, 1998, long-term capital management, 2008 financial crisis. As steep as they were, there were means of being able to bounce back, perhaps because of the innards of what the dollar and petrodollar standard has been. I ask because Putin, as you all know, just asked for gas payments in rubles and an act that is actually not prohibited by the sanctions. It's completely allowed, and it's being very quietly considered across Europe. And yet it's clearly aimed at tweaking dollar hegemony, possibly triggering insolvency contagion out west while providing an energy currency alternative that's also tied to like $132 billion worth of Russian gold stored in Russia, which are like 21% of the Russian reserves. So they're playing Go. The West is playing checkers, but I sense everyone knows that there's a shelf life to the petrodollar standard and to the dollar as reserve currency standard. And the East is just being very shrewd in trying to replace it while minimizing damage to itself.
James, it's such an excellent question. What is the future of the petrodollar? I mean, we've gotten so wedded to it. Are we seeing its final gasps? Go ahead.
Well, Peter, just recently, the Chinese said to other people, Saudi Arabia, listen, we're going to pay you in renminbi. So, and the Saudis said, okay, we'll take renminbi. You know, the Saudis have been a great friend of the Americans with lots and lots of dollars, euro dollars, petrodollars, all kinds of dollars. But now the Chinese have said to the Saudis, America's great friend, let's trade in renminbi. I didn't say it. They said it.
Well, what is the implications of that, Jim?
Again, it's more and more. It's an accelerated move away from the U.S. dollar. Again, I'm American, Peter. I don't like seeing this, but I can see that America's making a grave mistake with its, quote, sanctions to hit people again. And it's hurting us. It's going to hurt me and my children more than it's going to hurt America.
Mitch, you know, the implications of this for Europe are really immense, because I would go far as to say, and no one in the program has to agree with me, but I will just say what I think. I mean, this whole gambit with Ukraine is basically directed at regime change in Russia. But I would posit this will see regime change in Europe, all across Europe, if it continues. Go ahead, Mitch.
Well, look, I don't know about that. I know that that's what they'd like, but you know, this regime change stuff never worked before either, but it worked out worse than the sanctions have worked out. Because look at our examples that we had in either in Iraq, where it didn't work out, and Libya, that didn't work out either. But as far as what's going on now, it's a boomerang effect, and I couldn't agree more. This is a busted flush. It's a bad trade. One of the biggest problems that we have, Peter, throughout Europe and the United States now is we've got massive censorship, and we've got a crazy social media in the past 2 years that put so much propaganda and disinformation and misinformation out there. You've got fake fact-checking, and you're only allowed to say certain things. If you say the wrong things, your social credit score goes to zero, and you're shunned from polite society. All actions have consequences. We live in a world now where the sovereign immunity, and Jim can attest to this because he's an old timer like me. He can attest to the sovereign immunity of his central bank. That is sacrosanct. That no longer exists. So when you get rid of due process and the rule of law, what do we have left? How are we trading things? How do you have confidence in the system that does that? And I agree with Jimmy. I'm American too. And for me, it's difficult to understand why they're doing this, because it seems like they're just shooting themselves in the foot. And it's not working out some kind of compromise arrangement, because this is not the Russia of 1950. And I think that this is a big underestimate by a lot of the people on the other side of this. And if it's a bluff, it's a busted flush, I'm telling you, and it needs a rethink.
Okay, Jim, I see you wanting to jump in. Go ahead, real quick. Go ahead.
You know, we're talking about sanctions. I get to repeat what I said before. The market always finds a way around sanctions. I remember 40 years ago, I met a guy and I said, what do you do? He said, I'm a sanctions buster. I said, what? And with great glee, he explained to me, whenever somebody puts on sanctions, he and his guys get together and figure out a way to bust the sanctions. I mean, they've never worked. They're good publicity for a few days, but in the end, the market finds a way. I mean, all Peter, I have traveled around the world many times, as you know, and I cannot tell you how many times I've run into sanctions busters and black markets and everything else. The market is smarter than bureaucrats.
That's for sure. Particularly government officials, okay? Pai, where is this all going? I mean, obviously, I live in Russia. We're beginning to feel the effects of some of the sanctions here. I don't know if it's the beginning of something or if this is what's really what we're going to have to deal with. We can live without McDonald's and Netflix. Yeah, I can tell you that here. But, I mean, why should Russia really engage with the West anymore? I mean, they tried for 30 years after the Cold War. It's a busted flush, has already been said on this program. That's why, the future is to the east. I mean, Russia's given up on Europe.
I mean, where is it going is that regardless, the West, meaning the transatlantic community collectively, certainly the private banks and central banks, will need to resort to printing money vastly at a vastly higher rate than, again, pre-February 24th. We're already experiencing the real rate of inflation in the double digits here in the U.S. In response to potential cutoff of energy, counter steps taken from the East, currency war, there will be despite raising of interest rates, there will need to be a variant of a quantitative easing reintroduced that will just further tweak the dollar. And I think collectively fiat currencies, because the East has figured out how to go back onto a credible gold standard, but oil on gold, as I wrote a paper 7 years ago, a prescriptive paper essentially, is linking the most valuable commodities on the planet to the reconception of what money is.
Okay, so Jim, what does that mean for Western economies? Okay, I mean, as we've heard on this program twice already, the East has figured it out, you know, in having a credible currency. Again, it goes back to the petrodollar and the financialization of the economy. What is the future of the Western economies?
Peter, you're not old enough to remember, but the pound sterling lost its status as the world's reserve currency, and England went down the tubes, even went bankrupt, literally bankrupt in 1976.
That's right.
The world's had many reserve currencies throughout history. None have lasted more than 100, 150 years. Now the U.S. is forcing itself, us, off the U.S. dollar standard, and the world's going to have to find something else. And when you lose that status, Peter, as England found out, you lose a huge amount of prosperity, privileges, et cetera. It doesn't happen overnight, but anybody who is young today is going to see dire consequences, just as the English lost many privileges and status after they started losing that status.
Now, let's go to Mitch in London. You wanted to react to what Jim was saying there. Go ahead, Mitch.
Yeah, I was just saying that, unfortunately, what we've got is a perfect storm set up, because we were already about to head into a recession. You've got the Federal Reserve that's still doing unprecedented quantitative easing by buying $120 billion worth of assets a month. So when that stops, the party's over when that stops. And I think the stock market's going to collapse. And I think every asset class is going to correct. So the people who are postured appropriately going into this next decline will be the ones who are very successful. And those who are over-leveraged are going to get slaughtered. And how bad it gets depends upon the availability of energy and food stock. I see this can get very, very bad very quickly, because inflation in the U.S. right now is around 17% when you use the 1980s basis to calculate it.
Jim, you wanted to jump in real quick before I go to Pi in Los Angeles.
I just quickly want to say, since this is a show about sanctions, these sanctions, Russia's and America's, are pushing more and more Asian countries together. Get out of globe, Peter. You push 3 billion with a B people together. That's going to have a powerful effect on all of us down the road. And that's one of the things that the sanctions are doing. Another reason sanctions should be done away with always throughout history.
You know, Pi, let's go back to Los Angeles here. So, again, kind of where is this going here? I mean, from what all of you have said here, I see no silver lining whatsoever. I mean, I don't know what asset you said we should all be owning right now, because it looks like there's no escape. Go ahead, in Los Angeles.
Because this was not just a rush to judgment or to action on February 24th, and because the Eurasian bloc and partners had done their homework well enough in advance, dotting every I, crossing every T, and anticipating everything thrown at them fiscally and otherwise, there will be, I reiterate, and it's already happening, a ricocheting effect back against Western institutions and neoconservatives in charge of policy between London, Washington, New York, Brussels, and elsewhere. That is the foremost pressure point and point of danger, is because they're rabid, feral, and very unpredictable. They want everyone to know that, and they're willing to pull out all the stops in order to try and isolate Russia.
We have 15 seconds. This sounds like a form of suicide to me. Am I wrong?
There's always an opportunity. Wherever there is anything going on, there's an opportunity. You've got to look for the silver lining in every dark cloud. People need to be optimistic, but you need to have cooler heads prevail in a situation like we have today. And okay, you need de-escalation.
Well, we don't have cooler heads. They're not prevailing, that's for sure here. That's all the time we have for this very pessimistic edition of the program. Many thanks to my guests in Singapore, London, and in Los Angeles. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.